The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Let's start off with a cute story. And there's a picture of a little girl sitting and looks on the side of a road overlooking a big, wide open area, and she's hugging a chicken. Sophie and Trixie enjoy a hike in New York's Catskill Mountains. Best Pals Contest, Mother Hen, Sophie and the Chicks, sounds like a rock group. From the moment my husband brought home a box of six chicks from the Tractor Supply Company at the start of the pandemic, our 9-year-old Sophie hasn't let them out of her sight. She named them Trixie, Birdie, Sweet Pea, Speedy, Captain Flint, and Adrian. We were reading Treasure Island and watching Rocky at the time, and was very upset when we wouldn't let them sleep in her bed. Sophie takes at least one chicken everywhere with her we let her, and has done incredible things with her flock. One hot day, she wanted to take Captain Flint to the creek. I wasn't so sure about it. Could chickens swim? Sophie balanced a stick on her river tube for Captain Flint to perch on, and the two floated down the creek. Naturally, Sophie dressed as a chicken for Halloween and convinced us Trixie had to come. The reactions from neighbors were hilarious. Wait, is that a real chicken you're holding? Trixie cooed the whole time, and there's a picture of her with a little chicken on top of her head, another she's on her scooter and the chicken's on the handlebars, and the other thing is in her chicken costume with the chicken in her arms. The chickens are teaching us about love as well as loss and grief. Sadly, Captain Flint faced an untimely death after a hawk attack. We had a chicken funeral and said a few words about what a good chicken she was, and thanked her for the joy she brought to our lives before we buried her. Sophie painted a lovely picture in memoriam and has worn a pendant with Captain's picture ever since. The chickens weren't allowed in the house until one morning after virtual school when Sophie told me, "There's nothing to feel happy about." Since then, we've allowed one inside at a time if Sophie immediately cleans up after the visit. The chickens brought a glimmer of joy back to our lives. In a few short months, they've taught us to accept situations we can't change and find joy where we can. I am so grateful. She's nominated by Emily Kromzak. Knocking out of the kitchen. Did not realize until now that step up to the plate was a baseball idiom. As a picky eater growing up, I thought it meant showing up at the table and tackling the meal as best you could. And all in a day's work. This Twitter alert from the sheriff's office in San Miguel, Colorado, leaves no stone unturned. A large boulder the size of a large boulder is blocking the southbound lane of Highway 145. Expect delays. I realized just how long we've been working from home the day the package was delivered. My husband referred to it, the entrance of our house, as the lobby. And what's your emergency? Four ER nurses share their strangest encounters on Reddit.com. I once had a patient tell me he needed his decapitation medicine. It took a minute before I realized he was asking for his constipation medicine. I asked a patient complaining of dizziness if she ever had been diagnosed with vertigo. She said no. Her daughter shook her head. No, no, she said. My mom's a Libra. It was 3 a.m. when a well-dressed man came in with his 8-year-old healthy-looking son. What's the problem? I asked. He replied, "Well, I was at a wedding, and it occurred to me that my son is a little short. Can you give him something right now to make him taller?" A man once came in with a minor puncture to his eye. He had wanted to see what it looked like to have a bow and arrow aimed at him. So he aimed a drawn arrow at his reflection in a mirror and accidentally fired it. The arrow bounced off the mirror and proceeded to hit him in the eye. We found a fix. Get a stripped screw head. Let he who has not incompletely stripped a screw cast the first stone. Who hasn't? Next time this happens to you, slip a rubber band over the tip of the screwdriver before tightening or loosening. The band is thin enough to fill in the screw groove, even a Phillips head, and textured enough for the screwdriver to grasp. This works on screw heads that are already stripped and will also prevent the stripping of new screws if your screwdriver isn't a perfect fit. Number 2. Save fingernails from keyring torture. Sliding a thick car key or fob into your keychain is the modern-day equivalent of bamboo shoots under the fingernails. A staple remover can save you the agony. Its teeth delicately slide between the rings and hold them open while you painlessly attach or remove the keys and membership cards. Oh, wow, that's kind of cool. It's got a picture of it here. Soft and hard as a brick ice cream. Food. For all the dairy queens and kings who've tried to scoop rock-hard ice cream straight from the freezer. There was a thing on Facebook the other day that said somebody Boy, when I was younger, I could do so much. The other day, I wrenched my shoulder just trying to get hard ice cream out. Straight from the freezer. There's no need to bend another spoon. Run a sharp knife under hot water and use it to carve a tic-tac-toe board across the top layer of the ice cream. This increases the ice cream's exposed surface and expedites the thawing process. If you still need help, run your scooper under hot water, too. Number 4. The gift that keeps on giving. Money. Enter a different birthday each time you sign up with a company online. This way, instead of being flooded with celebratory discounts that you can't take advantage of all at once on your real birthday, you'll get regular discounts throughout the year. It's totally harmless for you and the company, and it could even help protect your identity if its database is hacked. Number 5. Freshen up your window screens. Cleaning. Door and window screens are magnets for spiderwebs, dust, and icky debris, but they're devilish tricky to take down and clean. One solution, use a lint roller. Just a few swipes across the surface of the screen will cut down on that grime and fizz. That's a great idea. And now we come to the 13 things. Scentsational news about smell. That's spelled S-C-E-N-T, sational. And there's a cartoon picture of a gentleman standing there with a rose in his hand smelling the wonderful perfume. Number 1. When Americans were asked in 2018 which sweet they would miss the most if they lost it, smell came in dead last. Only 2% of respondents picked it. Then came COVID-19. In the early 2020, ear, nose, and throat doctors around the world saw an unusual number of patients who had uncountably lost their sense of smell. Many of these specialists then developed the same condition, and some became very ill. Suddenly, the stepchild sense took center stage. Number 2. Researchers soon realized that smell loss is a leading indicator of COVID-19. Those infected with the virus are 27 times more likely than non-infected people to exhibit smell dysfunction, but only 2.5 times more likely to run a fever. Some public health experts started proposing using smell tests, not temperature tests, to screen people for the virus. Number 3. Scientists still don't fully understand the link between smell and COVID-19. While they know that patients who don't lose their sense of smell are more likely to be hospitalized and placed on a ventilator, they don't know why. Perhaps most worrying, they don't know whether this virus' adeptness at invading noses indicates a similar skill at invading brains. The smell receptors at the top of our noses are connected to the base of our brains. Number 4. Smell loss could also be an early warning sign of Alzheimer's disease, schizophrenia, or autoimmune diseases such as lupus. These disorders can shrink or otherwise disrupt the parts of our brains that process smell. Smell dysfunction is also the most common early symptom reported by Parkinson's patients, even before they begin to experience motor-related symptoms. Number 5. That said, if your sniffer isn't as sharp as it used to be, don't panic. Our sense of smell naturally declines as we age. A third of the people in their 80s can't smell at all. Smoking dulls the sense, too. One more reason to quit. But you can boost your smelling savvy with a bit of training. Vary what you eat and pay attention to food's aromas. Our sense is strongest when we're hungry. Number 6. If seeing is believing, smelling is tasting. Our palates are almost entirely dependent on our ability to smell. While taste buds distinguish among broad categories of flavor such as sweet and salty, it's the receptors in our nasal cavities that parse out the pasta from the pastrami. Number 7. Women have keener noses than men, perhaps because they have many as 50% more cells than the part of the brain that processes smell. Studies have shown that women are better able to identify and distinguish among scents than men. Number 8. Pregnant women have especially sensitive noses. One theory is that the increased sensitivity during pregnancy reduces the likelihood of the mother ingesting a toxin. On the other hand, depression literally depresses our ability to smell. Number 5. While no scent is universally good or bad, our negative response to odors we perceive as foul is detectable during an MR brain scan. The smell-mind connection is such that smell can play a role in the treatment of PTSD. Most current approaches try to teach the trauma victims to suppress their fear memories, but they must first be able to recall those memories. Suggestive smells can help trigger them. Number 10. Scent also heightens our positive experiences. Even the smell-o-vision movies are never caught on. A Dutch museum recently took advantage of this by surrounding Jan Wilhelm Plynman's painting The Battle of Waterloo with a unique fragrance combination of gunpowder, sweat, and a perfume called 4711 Eau de Cologne, which is the one Napoleon wore. Number 11. Humans might not have the greatest sniffers in the animal kingdom, but we're sharper than we might think. People willing to crawl through grass like dogs are perfectly capable of finding and following a scent trail. The species with the strongest sense of smell, however, also has the biggest snooze. The African elevator snaws, I'm sorry, the African elephant. Elephants are so sensitive to scent that they can smell water from 12 miles away. Number 12. People with anomesia have no sense of smell. Unable to detect odors such as smoke or spoiled milk, they are twice as likely to succumb to fire and food poisoning than those with the senses intact. Most cases are the result of illness or head injury. Car accidents are a leading cause. Those who are born with anomesia often don't realize it until their teens, as children aren't screened for smell disorders the way they are for vision and hearing problems. Number 13. Companies in France and Canada are developing devices that mimic our sense of smell and can be built into home appliances to create ovens that shut themselves off when they detect burning and refrigerators that alert you when produce is at its peak ripeness. Imagine all the wasted food we could save, not to mention never burning another piece of toast. And you who have bought a new car, do you realize that they actually enhance the new car smell in the showrooms of auto dealers? Don't do that, please. Life hack for parents. Convince your kids you hate something you actually like. My 5 and 7-year-olds just spent 10 minutes tormenting me by massaging my shoulders. Everyday miracles. And there's a drawing here of a bunch of people in front of a banner that says Class of 75, with the pictures of two people, Leo Pribble and Pat Pribble. And a man with a beard and an African-American woman and a guy with a crew cut and another guy with gray hair. With open arms at last, the scars that Pat Pribble carried through his life were formed nearly 50 years ago, inflicted by fellow students at Woodland, Washington, who picked on him because he was different. Pat's parents held him back in the fourth grade, so he ended up in the same class as his younger brother, Leo. Forever the oldest kid in class, Pat tried to fit in. He played sports, he went on dates, but he was always just not good enough for this, just not smart enough for that. Pat Pribble was a target. A trek through the high school years is filled with landmines. Bullies master the uncanny ability to find weakness, inflicting emotional pain with the precision of a surgeon with a scalpel in hand. Allies vanish, as being popular becomes more seductive than being loyal. After graduating, Pat drifted and lost his way. He was homeless for a stretch, and he was never married or had children. He never had a career, only a series of jobs. Now 65, he lives in a studio apartment in southeast Portland, Oregon, with his dog, getting by on Social Security. From a distance, with his long gray hair and beard, Pat appears tough, the kind of man you might cross the street to avoid. It is a facade. To talk with him reveals a gentle side. He speaks quietly, measuring his words, careful not to reveal what he is thinking and feeling, as those are the very things others once seized upon to mock him. Leo said his older brother always stood up for him. As a self-described closeted gay man in a small town, Leo said he kept his head in the sand. People sense something about me, Leo said last year. They call me names. Pat got into fights defending me. After high school, Leo moved to Portland and into Hawaii, where two big life changes occurred. He began his career as a floral designer, and he fell in love. After 15 years, Leo and his partner moved to San Francisco. They had been together 36 years when the love of Leo's life died. In 2010, at his high school's class 35th reunion, Leo ran into Jim Carrey, who asked about Pat. Leo told Carrey that Pat wasn't there because he'd been picked on in school. That bothered me, said Carrey. Decades later, one incident remained fresh. All of us would get in our cars and party down by the river, Carrey recalls. Pat was there with a date and got his car stuck in the sand. A group of guys grabbed the side of his car and flipped it over, with Pat and his date inside. He was begging them for them to turn it over. They just kept laughing at him. Finally, they pushed it right side up. Carrey fell silent. Pat had it rougher than the rest of us. Last November, as Carrey planned for the 45th reunion in 2021, postponed a year because of the pandemic, he decided to personally invite Pat. With a bit of research, he found his number and called. Pat answered. Even after all these years, says Carrey, the mind remembers a voice. It was Pat. As the two men caught up on each other's lives, Carrey learned that Leo had terminal brain cancer and had only months to live. Days later, Carrey called Leo. They talked for nearly 2 hours. That was a sad call, says Carrey. I was saying hello and goodbye to Leo at the same time. At the end, Carrey asked whether there were any classmates Leo might like to hear from. Leo supplied a list of names. Carrey tracked down the men and asked them to call Leo. Then made one more request. Everyone should also call Pat. And so they did. We told each other stories, Pat says of his conversations. I talked about some of the lesser things and the good things, too. The love and kindness caught me unawares. Bruce Whitmire, now a dairy farmer and one of the classmates who made calls to Leo and Pat. Pat told him he'd been putting money aside each week to buy a bus ticket to San Francisco to visit Leo one last time before he died. 2 weeks later, Whitmire called back to say he didn't want him to take a damn bus. He bought Pat a first-class flight to San Francisco and said he would also be sending him walking around money, enough to do whatever he wished with his brother. The Prepper brothers were touched. "Never underestimate people," said Leo. "We're all different now than when we were kids." Leo passed away this past January. His former classmates had promised him that after he was gone, they wouldn't lose track of Pat, and they have kept that promise. Every week, one or more of them call Pat to see how he's doing. Healing wounds from the past has allowed Pat to look to the future. "I'll be at the next reunion," he says. "These guys..." He pauses, stifling tears. "Let's just say that everyone needs people like these guys in their lives." I have an IKEA joke, but it takes too much time to set up. The internet loves a good joke, and many bad ones, too. Some of the most popular follow a pattern that starts, "I'll have a joke, but..." and ends with the ironic reason that the joke can't be revealed after all. These are some of the latest and greatest. "I have a prune joke, but it's dated. I have a Star Wars joke, but it's forced. I have a Nihilist joke, but who cares? I have a joke about a broken clock, but it's not the right time. I have a joke about cows, but I don't want to milk it. I have a joke about Zoom meetings, but my internet connection is unstable." Laugh lines. I only use shampoo that smells like raspberries, so people don't think it's weird when I have jam in my hair. Dawn M. "Basically impossible to carry a watermelon around without seeming proud or ashamed of it." Samuel Salisbury. "Grapefruit juice tastes like orange juice. It just found out it has to work on its day off." "I buy seedless grapes because let's leave the grape growing to the vineyards." "Do you think the guy who designed hand grenades really hated pineapples or really loved them?" "A cantaloupe is an antelope that doesn't." The Healthy. Wellness from thehealthy.com. "A dimension that can be cured. I couldn't even sign my name," says an ex-teacher. It took years for doctors to spot the real cause. At first, Dorothy Sorlee thought she was just getting old, though not as gracefully as she'd hoped. Retired from teaching English at a local college near her home in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Sorlee, then 74, began losing interest in things she'd enjoyed, including reading and cooking. "I thought, where are the good authors these days?" "Well, it wasn't the authors, it was me," she said. She couldn't concentrate. Her handwriting changed. The symptoms occurred so gradually that initially she wasn't aware anything was happening. "It wasn't like you get a pain in your knee and you know you need to see a doctor," says Sorlee. "Things kept getting worse. Her neat teacher's handwriting went from sloppy to illegible. When you have to sign over power of attorney to your husband because you can't even sign your name, that's a terrible feeling," she says. She started worrying that she might be developing early dementia. The physical symptoms progressed too. Beside having been a good swimmer, she found she could no longer even stay afloat in a pool. More worrisome, she began having trouble walking and started falling. She also experienced urinary incontinence. Through it all, her doctor struggled to explain what was happening. "My decreased mobility was blamed on my arthritis and my right foot, which needed surgery," Sorley told the UCare Leader Telegram. "My lack of interest I blame on pain. The reality was I was unable to concentrate." Despite having surgery on her foot, Sorley soon couldn't walk on her own. She and her husband, Jim Ernest, were desperate for answers. It would take years before they got them. The doctor's diagnoses, all incorrect, could account for one or two of Sorley's symptoms, but not all of them. And none of the treatments seemed to help. "I think I was tested for Parkinson's disease maybe 2,700 times," Sorley says. "It wasn't Parkinson. It wasn't Alzheimer's." The couple traveled across the country looking for someone who could tell them what was wrong or at least treat the symptoms. Native American Healing in northwestern Alabama. Diagnostic Chiropractic in Michigan. Eastern Medicine, Natural Medicine, and Western Medicine, of course, says Sorley. She also visited the famed Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota for a consultation. One possible explanation for her symptoms and another proved incorrect. Throughout the ordeal, Sorley's primary care doctor, Kevin Workland, an internal medicine physician at Mayo Clinic Health System in Eau Claire, refused to give up. "I'm blessed with a marvelous primary care doctor," Sorley says. "Never once did he say to me, 'Dorothy, you're getting older, just adjust.' Dr. Wergelin sent her to a physical medicine and rehabilitation expert who in turn referred her to a neurosurgeon, Jonathan Bledsoe, also part of the Mayo and Nuclear. Dr. Bledsoe ordered a CT scan, and Sorley had barely returned home from her appointment when he called her. He said, "We've got it. We can fix it." When Sorley returned to the office the next day, Dr. Bledsoe told her that the ailment responsible for all of her symptoms was a little-known condition called normal pressure hydrocephalus, NPH. Throughout her 2 years of medical visits and tests, Sorley had never heard NPH mentioned. Although her condition was detected at an advanced state, having progressed during her years when she was searching for a diagnosis, it was treatable. In fact, NPH is sometimes referred to as treatable dementia. It is an insidious and mysterious disorder that can mimic many more common problems, including Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. An estimated 700,000 people in the United States have NPH, although it's believed that fewer than 20% of them are correctly diagnosed. NPH typically affects people 60 and older because the three main symptoms, difficulty walking, cognitive problems, and urinary incontinence, can occur in people for other reasons. Doctors can overlook or misinterpret them, explains Abhay Mogadhar, M.D., associate professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University. Older women often have bladder issues, for instance, and men may suffer from prostate disorders that cause incontinence. Walking can be compromised by arthritis, diabetes, or foot problems, as well as by Parkinson's disease. And while Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia, other conditions such as vascular problems, Lewy body dementia, which often occurs with Parkinson's disease, Lyme disease, thyroid disorders, and even depression can all cause cognitive changes. But if you see the three symptoms together, your suspicion of NPH needs to be raised, says Dr. Mogadhar. The brain is surrounded by fluid, which helps to cushion and protect it. Sometimes too much of the cerebrospinal fluid accumulates, a condition called hydrocephalus. The excess of fluid causes a rise in intracranial pressure and can damage brain tissues. Most cases of hydrocephalus occur either in newborns as a birth defect or later in life after a brain injury. When a condition occurs with no identifiable cause, it is dubbed idiopathic NPH. The normal pressure part of the name is misleading. While NPH can occur with little or no increase in intracranial pressure, often the pressure fluctuates. Regardless, the excess fluid damages brain tissue and causes NPH trio of major symptoms. The preferred treatment is to surgically implant a shunt to avert excess fluid away from the brain to elsewhere in the body, typically the abdomen, where it can be harmlessly absorbed. Sorley's memory from the period after her shunt surgery are hazy, but she recalls recovery as slow. She checked into a rehab facility and worked hard at physical, speech, and occupational therapy. She does remember lots of support from family, friends, and Mocha Joe, a rescued golden retriever therapy dog. "That dear dog," says Sorley. "When I was at my worst, he would sit by my side." Ernest says that his wife recovered a lot faster than she thinks. Dorothy sometimes doesn't give herself enough credit for her recovery from the most serious aspects of the condition, he says. "The major changes happened very quickly. I was greatly relieved within 2 weeks, and she continued to improve for a long time." Sorley is now free of NPH symptoms and walks 5 miles a day. According to Ernest, she's at 120%, and I just as soon take off that 20%. I can't keep up, he tells her. "I know that there's no cure for this and that shunts can have problems," Sorley says. "I realize that I'm getting older, but I'm feeling very healthy." Sorley has taken advantage of her good health and using her dramatic recovery to inform others about NPH. She gives presentations to local organizations and senior centers and works with the Hydrocephalus Association to outreach volunteer, a role that comes naturally to the longtime educator. Her goal to help others avoid the long journey she endured before finally getting a correct diagnosis and effective treatment. If this awareness can help one person avoid what my husband and I endured, Sorley says, my efforts are worsened. And there's some additional thing, a section here, journaling for back pain. Let me check one other thing here. Okay. "I was completely flummoxed by my debilitation until I read a book by John Sarno, M.D. This is by Danny Fagan. Theorized that when we suppress strong emotions such as anger, they can build up and eventually come out as a chronic ailment. Commonly lower back pain, but also migraines, irritable bowel syndrome, joint pains, dizziness, and more. I have been told by physicians that my back pain was caused by my herniated disc. Because the mainstream medical model doesn't widely understand the mind-body syndrome, if something is found on an MRI, that's likely to be your diagnosis. But Dr. Sarno said back pain is one of the most commonly misdiagnosed ailments there is. I found a psychotherapist who worked with Dr. Sarno and teaches an expressive writing method called journal speak. This writing practice opened up a new, whole new pain-free, anxiety-free existence for me. I taught my nervous system to relax out of fight or flight mode, and the symptoms stopped firing. My MRI is still a mess, but I have no pain. And then we have, as soon as I get the pages turned, my apologies. Do you need an air portable air purifier? From record wildfires to COVID-19, rarely have we been focused on the air we breathe as we have been the past few years. A portable air purifier might be just what the lung doctor ordered. Most models scrub the air via a high-efficiency particle air HEPA filter that removes at least 99.7% of airborne particles size 0.3 micron or larger. This means that purifiers can capture pet dander, dust, pollen, mold, and air pollution that is entered from outside. Depending on the model, air purifiers with a HEPA filter may also capture bacterial and viral particles that are 0.3 micron or larger. Even though the COVID-19 virus is smaller than 0.3 micron, it floats in the air on respiratory droplets, which are larger. When you're shopping, pay attention to the clean air delivery weight, CADR. It tells you how quickly the filter will clean a room of a given size. The higher the number, the faster it works. To specifically remove gases and odors, the purifier should have an activated carbon filter. Not everyone needs to buy an air filter purifier for every use, says Patricia Fabian, an indoor air quality expert and associate professor at Boston University School of Public Health. But she said that the purifiers make sense for people with underlying respiratory conditions such as asthma, as well as for pregnant women. Others who might benefit include people with seasonal allergies or allergies to pets or mold, and people who live with smokers, near industrial areas, or near freeways. The Environmental Protection Agency suggests that people who live in areas at high risk for wildfires definitely consider buying one. And with that, let's slide over to CR's, the Consumer Reports. CR's Great Outdoors Guide. Fresh air with good food is a treasured ride of summer. We've got the grills, menus, music, and movie watching gear for your backyard, the local park, or even the beach. Here's your sunny days ahead. And this is particularly apt now that we're finally getting out of the COVID restrictions, at least to a great extent. Number one, in the backyard. Whether it's a sprawling expanse of grass or something closer to the size of a postage stamp, your backyard is a tried and true summer venue that allows you to entertain at home with less risk. The secret to the success of any food-focused backyard event is a great grill, like one of those on the following pages, which we'll look at. A folding work table set up near the grill gives you instant counter space to work on. For a break from the usual burgers and hot dogs, we provide a tasty menu centered on grilled steak with a Spanish flair. If you're cooking for more than just a few people and want everything ready at the same time, consider making a brisket, which you can smoke for 6 to 16 hours a day ahead and reheat when company arrives. To take the fun of your alfresco soiree up a notch, we show you how to host a moonlit movie screening. And the food, a taste of Spain. And there's a picture of sliced steak here. Pasta salad, grilled spiced rub hanger steak, marinated and grilled vegetables and s'mores over the campfire. The menu is built around a steak recipe adapted from Quirate, authentic Spanish food from an American kitchen by Katie Button. The spice rub is my way of combining Spanish and Moorish seasoning with a distinctly American dish of grilled steak, says Button, who owns two restaurants in Asheville, North Carolina, with her parents and her husband, Felix Miana. Katie's Button rubbed hanger steak. To make the spice rub, stir in 1 teaspoon of sweet smoked paprika, 1 tablespoon of sweet cocoa powder, 1 teaspoon of cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of allspice, 1/4 teaspoon of cinnamon, and a pinch of cayenne in a small bowl. That sounds good. Sprinkle 1 1/2 teaspoon salt over a 1 1/2 pound steak, then season with pepper. Evenly coat the steak with the spice rub. For a medium rare steak, grill over medium hot heat until brown, 4 to 5 minutes per side. The fun. Showing a movie. In your backyard takes just a few pieces of gear and a little setup time. To start, you need a portable mini projector, $100 to $500. Look for one that provides 720 video resolution or greater, and at least 2,000 lumens, a measure of brightness. The brighter the better, because you increase the size of the projection by pulling the projector away from the screen, which dims the image. Depending on the projector, you'll typically place it between 8 and 12 feet from the screen to get a 100-inch image. You can purchase a large screen to project onto or use a white wall or a sheet pulled taut. A few mini projectors have built-in streaming capabilities or support wireless mirroring of video from a smartphone. If yours doesn't, plug a streaming medium player such as an Amazon Fire Stick or a Roku streaming stick into its HDMI port or connect a laptop to the projector. For optimal sound, connect the speaker to a projector to a Bluetooth speaker, including any of those in this package, which I'll show you in a minute, or a sound bar, either wirelessly through an RCA or a mini jack audio connection. Some projectors have rechargeable batteries that let you take them to a park or anywhere there's no power. For all other models, use an extension cord rated for outdoor use and place it where people won't trip over it. And the first way we'll look at is the LG Synbean PH550. And for very pricey for a mini projector, $419. Pricey for a mini projector, it delivers a very bright image, Bluetooth and wireless mirroring, so you can project videos from your phone. The rechargeable battery lasts for up to 2.5 hours. Expert evaluation score on the Vanco Leisure 430 at $100. This affordable option produces a relatively bright image of a decent size. It's a bit bulky, requires an outlet, and has less than HD quality picture quality, but it should satisfy many backyard moviegoers. Ultimate Ears, Hyperboom at $400. The Hyperboom speaker pumps out plenty of volume with impressive clarity. It's relatively large, but its vertical orientation means it doesn't take up much space on a patio or a picnic table. And then there's the Sonos Move for $400. Combining great sound with impressive versatility, the Move is the first Sonos speaker with a rechargeable battery and Bluetooth connectivity for easy pairing with the smartphone. And then we look at the different kinds of grills. Gas, $100 to $3,500. Small, 18 to fewer burgers. Mid-size, 18 to 28 burgers. Large, 28 or more burgers. 150 degrees to 850 degrees. Typically, you can smoke meats at 180 degrees Fahrenheit and get a sear at 550. Best for grilling. Anything, everything, you can fine-tune the flame for delicate fish like cod or seared pork chops and make easy work of burgers and brats. The most popular type, gas grills are a cinch to light. They heat quickly and they're easy to use. Add-ons like a rotisserie or pizza oven allow you to vary the fare. Models that score well on our temperature range test can cook at the broadest variety of temperatures, making them better at cooking the most diverse range of foods, says Larry Kufo, CR's engineer in charge of grill testing. The cons. You won't get smoky flavor cooking on gas. For that, you'll need to add a smoker box, which you fill with wood chips and leave on the grates. Grilling tip. Impress your family with perfect grill marks. Halfway through the initial sear, rotate the food 90 degrees. And they score the Weber Genesis 2 at $750 of 78. Then there's the Dynaglow, which is charcoal grill, and that is an 81 score, and that scores 230. And then there's the Vision Kamado, which is a big egg, and that costs $900, and that scores a 75. Charcoal, 70 to 375. Small to mid-size, 12 to 24 burgers, 150 to 550 degrees Fahrenheit. Best for grilling. Hearty food that can stand up to smoke, like steak, lamb, kebab, swordfish, and salmon steaks. Pros. You get great smoky flavor from the hot coals. Cons. Cooking over charcoal is more labor-intensive than gas. You'll need 20 to 30 minutes to light the coals fully, using a charcoal chimney. Grilling tip. Barrel charcoal grills are usually wider and can cook more food at once, but over a thinner coal bed, so they're better for burgers, bratwurst, and other cookout foods that are best cooked over even heat. Kettle charcoal grills tend to have a deeper and narrower coal beds, which can concentrate heat for searing, or if you close the damper, slow the rate at which the coals burn for a long, slow cooking. Don't forget that briquettes burn out after about an hour, says grillmaster Stephen Reichen, so you need to keep adding more coals to cook longer than that. And then the Kamado type of grill. Mostly mid-sized, about 20 to 24 burgers, and 150 to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Best for grilling. Food that benefits from cooking at a very high temperature, like a seared steak and coal-fired pizza, or from low sustained temperatures like ribs and brisket. Pros. Kamado grills offer an unparalleled control. They can hold a steady, low temperature for extended periods and go to nearly 1,000 degrees for searing. Cons. It can take an hour or more to bring coals to the right temperature, twice as long as some charcoal grills. Make sure the coals are fully lit and glowing orange, even slightly ashed over, before starting to cook. Grilling tip. Ceramic Kamado grills tend to be more sturdy and can be better insulated for superior temperature cold than non-ceramic models, but they have a higher starting price and are more difficult to assemble. Use briquettes for basic cooking and lump coal for a serious sear. And then there's a pellet grill. And my son-in-law actually has one of these, and they range from $350 to $2,000. Mostly mid-size, large, about 20 to 28 burgers. Best for grilling. Food that is easy to burn, such as pork chops or skin-on chicken, and large cuts that require cooking at low, steady temperatures, such as pork shoulder, ribs, and brisket. Pellet grills use wood pellets as fuel and are ideal if you love smoky flavor without a lot of effort or guesswork. Pros: they're simple to use, the temperature is easy to control, and the pellets impart distinctive flavors depending on the type you choose. Load the hopper with wood pellets and dial in the cooking temperature on a digital thermostat, just like on an oven. More pellets are drawn automatically from the hopper to maintain the heat. Pellet grills sometimes fail to get as hot as gas grills in our tests, which makes them less adept at searing, Kufo says. Grilling tip: for a smokier flavor, use hickory or mesquite pellets. For a milder flavor, try pecan or oak. And the tools. Paul Hope, one of CR's grill experts and a trained chef, tried out more than a dozen tools to find the ones that enhance grilling enjoyment and make it less of a chore. Here are his picks for the backyard cookout. The kettle pizza oven for gas grills, $225 at Amazon. Skip the $350 trendy freestand pizza ovens. I made about a dozen pizzas like this so far, and each has been amazing. The crust and cheese cook perfectly. It only works with gas grills, though. Traeger rib rack, $24 at Home Depot. I'm pretty proud of my ribs, which I smoked for 68 hours. This fits 8 racks on edge in the space of 3 racks laid flat. And you can use it to other types of grills. Just make sure it'll fit. Supreme color-coded extending s'more sticks. These s'more sticks are color-coded, so there's no need to guess who gets which one. They also retract for easy storage, and they run for $18 for 6 of them at Amazon. And Jolly Green barbecue gloves, $29 at Amazon. These heat-resistant silicone gloves are far from fashionable, though they provide enough great grip to let you lift an entire hot brisket or pork shoulder. At the park. Pulling off a family gathering at a park or campground is easier than you might think. Use a portable grill for the cooking, and the wireless speakers we recommend should play for 8 to 24 hours between charges. You can recharge the most speakers from your car's USB port or an adapter in the cigarette lighter. DeWalt GGN1200, recreational generator for $650, was exceptionally quiet in our test, runs 4 to 10 hours, and puts out 1,700 watts. Play for a sound bar, a movie projector, a laptop fan, and even a few phone charges. Want to keep drinks ice cold? The Zorgi 16-ounce vacuum insulated mug, $28, got a top score for temperature retention in our tests. The food. American fare with an Italian flair. Classic burgers with seeded potato buns, cheese and condiments, Emilia Roma elote, grilled corn with garlic, basil, and cheese. Cheese on corn? That's interesting. Homemade brownies. This standard menu has a delightful twist. Grilled corn with garlic, basil, and cheese. A recipe adapted for park-friendly grilling from How to Cook Vegetables by the grill master, Stephen Rageman. Make you hear some popcorn like crackling as the corn cooks on the grill, he says. Stephen Reichman's Emily Regana Elote Grilled Corn. Make the garlic, basil, butter in advance of placing in a heat-safe bowl. Melt a half stick of unsalted butter in a small saucepan. Stir in 1 clove of minced garlic and 4 basil leaves cut into slivers. Cook over medium-high heat until fragrant, but not brown, about 2 minutes. At the park, set your grill to high heat. Brush or scrape the grill grate clean and oil it well. Lightly brush 4 ears of the husk corn with the garlic basil butter and season with salt and pepper. Arrange the ears on the grate. Grill until the kernels are darkly brown, rotating the ears every minute or so to ensure they cook evenly. Baste the corn with more garlic basil butter as it grills and sprinkle with 3/4 cup finely grated Parmesan cheese before serving. Ooh, that sounds good. The Flame, a portable grill, $80 to $420. Best for grilling anything you cook on a regular gas grill. Pros: light and compact, many are built to be used on a tabletop. No table? Choose one with tall legs so you don't have to cook on the ground. Many run on a 1-pound propane cylinder, which lasts only 1.5 to 2 hours. A grilling tip: take a few extra propane cylinders or choose a model like the one at Wright, which takes a 20-pound tank. Telling people that they can't have a burger because you run out of propane before everyone's been fed is a sure way to spoil a cookout and maybe lose your life. The Broil King at $300. The tools: OXO Good Grip 16-inch locking tong, $16 at OXO. Double and light with a perfect grip, they work great at the beach too. Con cooking thermometer, $15 at Bed and Bath and Beyond. This helps make sure food is heated to a safe temperature. And a silicone basting brushes, $8 for 2 at Amazon. Usually to slather sauce or marinade on ribs and chicken. the fun. These speakers represent two different approaches to making your music bubble. The Bose SoundBlink Color 2, a 1.2-pound toss-in-your-bag accessory with powerful sonics that belie its modest size and moderate price. The controls are easy to use, and it pairs quickly with a phone through Bluetooth. The Braven XXL2, which resembles the Sasek beatboxes of the 80s, is a tailgating worthy monster machine with ample power for a sizably socially distanced party. It's a heavy 17 pounds, with much of the weight coming from a beefy battery that provides up to 18 hours of music and can even power other devices. The XXL2 pairs strong bass and volumes aplenty. It must be great out must in the great outdoors with a refined mid-range and extended highs. It will do equal justice to the Motown and Mozart, and the built-in bottle opener is a handy touch. And then we go to the beach. A fest at the beach requires a little bit of extra planning, but the extra logistical lift is worth it. There's something about the combination of sunshine and swimming that makes even great food taste better. A coolie is a key to safely transporting and storing the ingredients you bring and keep drinks cold. Remember that uncooked meat, fish, and other perishable foods you usually store in a refrigerator can be left out only for an hour on a 90-degree day. Any longer and you run the risk of food poisoning. Be sure to bring along a good sunscreen, too, and resupply it often. And they've got a picture of a portable grill called the Next Grill, and that is $110. Surf on a turf on a skewer. Bacon-wrapped scallop kebabs. Homemade potato chips seasoned with herbs and oil-based seasoning. Orange section or lemon bars for dessert. Serve up a taste of the sea with scallop kebabs that you could assemble at home and grill quickly on the beach. This recipe is from the chef cookbook Arthur Kevin Curry. The scallop kebabs are a great way to come out of your comfort zone and elevate your grill game, Curry says. If you're planning to grill on a portable or public grill, keep the kebabs under 40 degrees in a sealed plastic bag in an ice-filled cooler until you're ready to cook them. You can also grill the scallops at home and bring them to eat cold. Prepare the scallop skewers at home. Combine 1 1/4 teaspoon olive oil, 1 tablespoon coconut sugar, available at Target and supermarkets, and 2 heaping teaspoons smoked paprika to make a paste. Rack 8 jumbo scallops with a slice of bacon each. Skewer the scallops, no more than 3 per stick, and brush on the paprika paste. Transfer to a plastic storage bag and keep cold until you're ready to cook them at the beach. Grill over medium fire about 8 minutes per side until the scallops are just cooked through and the bacon is crisp. And the tools. A Cousinart tool set, $28. Oh, that's a nice-looking grill set. This thoughtful kit has tongs, a spatula, and a meat fork, plus extras like kebab and corn holders, and all in a neatly organized case, so you don't have to wrangle a hodgepodge of tools. And Cave Tools Barbecue Kebab, and by the way, that's $28 on Amazon. Cave Tools Barbecue Kebab Skewers and Rack, $38 on Amazon. These reusable skewers keep even tender food, like the scallops, from spinning, so that everything cooks evenly. The raised rack keeps delicate food off the grates. So that was pretty interesting. All right. The next thing is kind of serious, and we may not get through the whole thing before we run out of time. But we'll do the best we can, and we can always come back to it next week. And it's a little, just a hair out of date, since we seem to be nearing the end of the thing. But we're not done with COVID-19 yet. So how to cope with COVID-19 right now. And you got to remember, these things are printed probably 60 days before they actually come out. More than a year after the coronavirus turned our lives upside down, experts have developed effective ways to help heal those who contract COVID-19. This is the essential information you need. And let's start off with in mid-March of 2020, soon after the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus a pandemic, U.S. hospitals began to fill with gravely ill people. As cases surged, stores, schools, and businesses went remote. Healthcare professionals across the country worked feverishly to save lives, but had no roadmap to help them handle the new threat. We didn't know how COVID-19 was spread, recalls Peter Cohen, MD, an internist at Harvard Medical School, and author of a set of medical guidelines for doctors treating COVID-19 patients. We had absolutely no idea what to do in terms of treatment. We were in totally uncharted territory. But they learned, day by day. Remarkable advances have been made in a short period, a group of Cleveland Clinic physicians wrote in a review of treatment studies for severe COVID-19, published recently in the journal BMJ. Now vaccines developed in record-breaking time are widely available. Health experts know how the COVID-19 spreads, and doctors have a more predictable, precise understanding of which groups are at high risk for severe illness and therapies that may help them avoid hospitalization. They also have effective treatments for those who are hospitalized and have clarity on what good care looks like for people managing the illness at home. Still, the coronavirus is likely to be with us for a while. Infection rates remain high, although the rapid growing numbers of vaccinated people ultimately help drive those down. And variants are emerging. Also, while most people are on the mend in a few weeks, some are ill for months or longer. Many of us are still unsure what to do if we contract COVID-19 and how to control fevers and aches, when to call the doctor, and when to head to the emergency room. To help, Consumer Reports gather the most recent evidence on how to manage and recover from an infection, whether it's mild, moderate, or even severe. You're sick. Now what? With proper care, most people with mild to moderate COVID-19 recover well at home. But let your doctor know if you suspect you have it so they can determine whether it's greater risk for severe illness. This includes those who are older than 65, are immunocompromised, or have pre-existing conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, obesity, cancer, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Get tested. If you've been exposed to someone who has or may have COVID-19, or you start to develop symptoms such as fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, fatigue or body aches, headache, loss of taste or smell, sore throat, congestion or runny nose, nausea and diarrhea are also common, isolate yourself and get a COVID-19 test. This stuff should have been given out about 10 months ago. Doctors are free and available at doctor's offices, hospitals, and pharmacies, where you can often be tested via drive-through. Call first. You may need an appointment. PCR tests, the most accurate, usually produce results within 48 hours. With a rapid test, you'll have to answer in minutes to hours, but it's less precise than a PCR. Your doctor might also direct you to take an at-home test. If a test is negative but you have symptoms, talk to your doctor and continue isolating. You may need to take another test. Use the right at-home treatments. Rest and hydration are key. Drinks with electrolytes such as Gatorade and Pedialyte may help you if you are having trouble keeping food down. Many people lose their appetites. It's fine to use over-the-counter medications to relieve fever and aches. COVID-19 can make you feel pretty knocked out, but some movement is important, such as walking around your home for 5 minutes every hour or two, along with staying hydrated, can help prevent COVID-related blood clots, which has been linked to potentially fatal strokes, says Jacqueline W. Fincher, M.D., president of the American College of Physicians. Plus, movement can help you evaluate your lung function. It's harder to breathe after a brief walk at home. Contact your doctor. In certain cases, doctors might prescribe an infusion of monoclonal antibodies, which are similar to the antibodies your immune system makes to fight infection. These may help keep COVID-19 from worsening, according to the Infectious Disease Society of America. Such treatments are available to those older than 65 and to younger people with more serious pre-existing conditions. Ask your doctor whether you qualify. The IDSA recommends a cocktail of bamlanivimab, that's interesting, B-A-M-L-A-N-I-V-I-M-A-B, and etesimibab, E-T-E-S-E-V-I-M-A-B, for people in those groups who have a mild to moderate COVID-19 and are at risk of progressing to severe disease but are not hospitalized. Started to feel better? You can stop isolating 10 days after you first feel ill, as long as you've been fever-free for at least 24 hours without medication and other symptoms are improving. Skip what's questionable. Over the past year, a number of supplements and drugs have been touted as COVID-19 remedies, often with little proof. People's interest in vitamin C and D and zinc, for example, has surged. But National Institutes of Health treatment guidelines say there's no evidence any of these help with COVID-19, and taking more than the advised amounts of zinc can be very harmful. Early in the pandemic, some people hoarded the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine, Palagual, based on the theory that it might prevent COVID-19. Later, the Food and Drug Administration reported serious adverse effects for some users and randomized trials showed that people who received the drug had longer hospital stays and were more likely to be intubated or die. There's no harm in taking hot showers to ease congestion or lie on your stomach to open your lungs, though there's not much evidence of benefit while ill at home. But if you're trying these strategies because you're struggling to breathe, you need to see a doctor. Keep track of your symptoms. It's wise to monitor yourself while sick, and if possible, do the following before contracting a doctor or urgent care or even summon emergency help. Number one, take your temperature. Fevers are common during COVID-19, but a lingering high fever can alert your doctor to a worsening illness. Number two, check your oxygen and respiratory rates. If you have a pulse oximeter, assess your blood oxygen levels. For your respiratory rate, count your inhalations for a minute. About 12 to 18 times is normal. 22 or greater is high and concerning. Record other key measurements. If you regularly monitor your blood pressure, blood sugar, and or heart rate, a current reading can reveal how much stress your body is under. For people with diabetes, a big change in blood sugar is a sign of overwhelming sickness, Fincher says. If you're going to be seen in person, wear a mask. And if you can, bring your insurance info and a list of your current medications. As I said, a lot of this information is kind of passe, but we're going to run through it anyway. Some people with COVID-19 need to see a doctor or be treated in a hospital. There are now some effective therapies for these patients, and doctors know at what stage each may be particularly helpful, an infectious disease doctor at Cleveland Clinic said, and lead author of a set of treatment guidelines for COVID-19. There's a Goldilocks zone, a timing for each of these agents and disease to process, he said. Know when to seek help. Contact your doctor urgent care right away if you have a fever over 102 degrees Fahrenheit that won't ease with acetaminophen or ibuprofen, have a falling blood oxygen level, healthy people should be of 95%, or are taking more than 20 breaths a minute and or feel increasingly short of breath. Breathing difficulties and other problems can ebb and flow. For some people who go on to develop complications such as pneumonia, symptoms often worsen 48 days after they first appear, says Harvard's Dr. Cohen. Your doctor will probably want to evaluate you to see whether you should be in the hospital. Call for emergency help immediately if you experience significant trouble breathing. 22 breaths or more per minute, a pulse oximeter reading 90% or below, based on two readings taken 5 minutes apart. Persistent chest pain or pressure, confusion you didn't have previously, or inability to stay awake, or pale, gray, or blue-tinged skin, lips, or nail beds. Although breathing trouble might worsen gradually, some of the other problems above might develop suddenly if your lungs have been working poorly for a while, says Sean McGann, MD and emergency physician at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia. What to expect at the hospital? In the ER, you'll be checked for lung damage and other pulmonary problems, and your oxygen level will be monitored. If you're found to need supplemental oxygen, doctors think you might require it in the next 24 hours, perhaps because x-rays suggest pneumonia, you'll probably be admitted. The same will happen if you seem to be getting significantly sicker overall and have a risk factor such as severe COVID-19, such as diabetes or heart disease. If admitted, you'll continue to receive oxygen for as long as is needed. Mechanical ventilators, which essentially breathe for patients, were used extensively in hospitals early in the pandemic. Now for most patients, doctors have less invasive options, such as high-flow nasal cannulas that can deliver more than 10 times oxygen of standard cannulas. Placing people on their stomachs, known as proning, also helps curb the need for ventilators. In fact, this strategy is so effective that it has been widely adopted for those who are hospitalized with COVID-19, says Greg Martin, MD, a professor of medicine at Emory University in Atlanta and president of the Society of Critical Care Medicine. As for medications, if you are receiving oxygen, you may also be given dexamethasone, a steroid that reduces inflammation and has been found to improve survival rates. In addition, you might be given remdesivir, an antiviral shown to shorten recovery time. If your immune system overreacts to the coronavirus, causing extreme body-wide inflammation, the IDSA recommends monoclonal antibody tocilizumab, along with steroids to help tamp down that inflammation. And now that it's known that hospitalized COVID-19 patients are at high risk for blood clots, doctors use blood thinners when needed to reduce the ability to clot. The lowdown on discharge. Once doctors are sure you're no longer needed help breathing, you'll be sent home if you can care for yourself or out to a rehabilitation facility, typically for a short stay if the healthcare providers think you'll need more help. This may be the case if you were hospitalized for an extended time or were on a ventilator. You could be prescribed certain medications for use at home, an inhaler to reduce lung inflammation that can make taking full breaths challenging. For example, many COVID-19 patients are also sent home with the pulse oximeters for monitoring blood level oxygen levels. Once home, you may need to pay precautions to avoid infecting others, unless it has been at least 10 days since your symptoms started and you've gone 24 hours without a fever. Immunocompromised people may remain contagious longer, so check with doctors if you're in that group. Your COVID-19 toolkit. A few tools and medications may come in handy to help you monitor or treat symptoms as you get through your illness. Over-the-counter meds. For body aches and fever, experts recommend acetaminophen, Tylenol or generic, or ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin or generic. Ibuprofen does not worsen COVID-19 as initially rumored. If you have a cough, especially one that's preventing you from resting, An OTC cough suppressant may help, but it's best to get your doctor's okay if you have a chronic health problem. A thermometer. A persistent high fever may recall a call to the doctor, so keep a thermometer handy for self-monitoring. And a pulse oximeter. This can help you monitor how well your lungs are working and know when to call the doctor. How to use a pulse oximeter. A home pulse oximeter can be tricky to use and may be less accurate than a medical-grade device, especially if you're wearing nail polish or you have darker skin. But it may help discern low blood oxygen, a sign your lungs aren't working properly. Focus on the trend, not one reading. Test regularly. Do it every morning and evening as your doctor directs. Make sure your fingers are warm and dry, then place an index finger in the fingertip monitor with the fingernail facing up, below heart level. Hold still until the device screen shows a blood oxygen level. Check the screen for 1 minute. Normal is usually 95% or higher, around 90% for those with chronic lung disease. If a low number appears, cough 3 times and take 3 deep breaths. If the number fails to rebound or you're having trouble breathing, call your doctor. Prevent reinfection. Antibodies, infection-fighting immune system proteins that we develop while ill with COVID-19 provide some protection against catching the disease again, but we don't know how much protection or how long that lasts. A Danish study published in March, The Lancet, found that people younger than 65 who had the illness were about 80% less likely to be infected a second time than others. But people older than 65 saw only a 47% reduced risk of reinfection. And the March study was done mostly before the spread of coronavirus variants, some of which can more easily reinfect people. So if you haven't yet gotten a COVID-19 vaccine, it's important to do so as soon as you can. Until you're fully vaccinated, try to stay at least 6 feet away from people outside your household and limit your interactions to well-ventilated spaces or outdoors. Wear a mask in public and follow Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidance, even if you are vaccinated. Well, there is a little more information to be had on this particular article, but we'll wait till next week to finish it up, and then we'll start something new as well. So, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please don't hesitate to call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.